us a call and tell us if you think Chicago's defense is going to be good enough to win that Super Bowl, if you think that Indianapolis' defense is going to be good enough to not cost them the Super Bowl. We talked with Jarrett Bell from USA Today yesterday about those very things. Here's Jarrett Bell.
Defense, you know, they've taken some major hits, and you know Tommy has. You know, you think of the Bears defense, and you know Brian Urlacher's good. You know he's all pro, but he's got a lot of people around him. And Tommy Harris was a huge loss. And then you look at this other defensive tackle, Tank Johnson, who's probably not going to be on the team very much longer with his off the field issues. Then you got Mike Brown, who is a big playmaker. So he's been out since the middle of the season, and he's gone for the rest of the year. And then the other day, you talk about those big players. Well, you know, they're missing one of their starting quarterbacks, Nate Vasher. So that would be as big of a concern, I think, for the Chicago Bears, right?
That's Jarrett Bell. So what do you think about Chicago's chances? This is what people are calling the week-to-week season. There's a Super Bowl champion every week. Do you think Chicago has a chance now with all the injuries they have?
Well, I mean, Rex Grossman seemed to be playing a little better. That's always been the biggest question mark. You know, your team is only going to be as good as the weakest link. You know, and that means that if they basically have got enough people in those backup positions that can fill in and get the job done, and some of the other stars on that defense are going to have to step up and start making some more plays, then they'll be fine. But, I mean, when you lose a Tommy Harris, you lose a Mike Brown for the season, I mean, those are really, really big players in the grand scheme of what they're trying to do. And the problem is, you know, when you're trying to win a championship, you know, you gotta be good, you got to have some luck, and you really got to have some luck with the injuries when it comes down to the end of the season. You can't lose any major players. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, even though they're playing a team, you know, this week that really isn't that good of a football team, that team is still going to come out fired up and trying to win that football game. It's going to be interesting to watch and see how the defense actually plays, how they react, and how they play without some of the key members that they're going to be missing.
And Indianapolis, it's interesting, you know, they give up 375 yards rushing, and one of the worst examples of tackling you can imagine. They add Rob Morris, who is supposedly a tougher linebacker, but they're still missing Bob Sanders. Do you think Indianapolis is going to do enough to gain enough stability at that position?
I don't know if they can. Yeah, right now, the best defense for Indianapolis is their offense. As long as their offense can continue to put points on the board the way that they have been, their defense is, you know, sometimes when your offense is playing extremely well, it's less pressure on the defense because, you know, every possession that they get, they're driving, putting themselves in position to either score or either A or B, you know, they're playing the field position game where the other team has to drive a long way to get into scoring position. I think when you get down to some of the better defenses in the game, especially in the AFC division, I think that that's where they're going to run into problems because I don't think that they're going to be able to turn every possession into a possible point-producing possession. And in that stead, then the weakness in their defense is really going to shine through because the team is really committed, you know, to running the ball a la a team like the Baltimore Ravens. You know, they're going to see a steady dose of Jamal Lewis. And if they run the ball with any efficiency that day, then all of a sudden the play action, the short rollouts and all that, those things come into play, and Steve McNair starts to really turn into the player that they brought him in to be. I see some real glaring problems for them, you know, on the defensive side. They're not, you know, technically sound. They don't tackle well. You know, Dwight Freeney gets up the field, you know, way too much. Sure, he had three sacks the other night, but against a team that was...
But that's all he's doing.
Well, but, I mean, that's his M.O. You know, he's a rush guy. But, you know, if I'm an offensive coordinator, what I do is I run the ball at him, you know, more times than not, especially when they move him around quite a bit. Because, you know what, he wants to get up the field. And when he gets up the field, he creates rushing lanes, you know, to run the ball. So, I mean, there's some things that they need to address. You know, they had some success last year, but, you know, the injury bug has bitten them this year, and they're not nowhere near as talented as what they were last year from the standpoint of how they're playing the game.
Listening to Seth Joyner, who is a regular on Jim Rohn, we appreciate multi-time Pro Bowl play. Let's talk about the Pro Bowl for a second, because you and I, you were in the Pro Bowl three times. I was in three times. I was actually all NFL seven times. But is it politics? Do you think the Pro Bowl is the best it can be? When I see that Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers over Tom Brady in the Pro Bowl? Are you kidding me? What's going on there?
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I know from firsthand experience, because I know what it is to have solid years and not get the recognition that you do, that you deserve. Yeah, the funny thing about the NFL is that, it's, especially at the quarterback position, if you're a first-round draft pick, you really don't have to do a whole lot to get the accolades, you know, that most people have to really work their tails off to get. Because there's some type of validity thing that goes on when you take a guy in the top five, you know, that those expectations are there. It's almost like the league wants to see these guys become stars. Not that, you know, I don't want to see them become stars, but I thought that when you made the Pro Bowl, you made the Pro Bowl because you were the best person at that position. And you cannot tell me, even though, you know, San Diego's had a great run, they've had a great run because LaDainian Tomlinson has made it very easy for Phillip Rivers to make this transition. When you run the ball, the way that he's running the ball, it's very easy to play the position of quarterback, because you can take your shots when you want to take them. You can hit the check downs. You know, all he's managing the football game, but you cannot tell me that he deserves to be in the Pro Bowl above Tom Brady. You cannot tell me, even, you know, despite the fact, you know, of this last incident, you cannot tell me that the leading touchdown receiver in the NFL, and Terrell Owens, doesn't deserve to be in the Pro Bowl. But you know what? He's a media sore spot. He's, you know, a sore eye for the NFL, and they are not going to give him, you know, his due respect because of that. And that's not right, because the best players are supposed to go to the Pro Bowl. It shouldn't be a politic thing. It shouldn't be, you know, one of those deals where, you know, if he's the correct media guy for the NFL and he does all the things right and says all the things right, it's all about what he does on the football field. And those two players are two of the best players at their position, and it's unfathomable to me that neither one of those guys are in the Pro Bowl and some other guys are.
Well, just because the team is winning, and that's, of course, the ultimate measuring stick. But as John Clayton, who's on this show every week or two, says, Warren Sapp is one example of a guy who is having a Pro Bowl season who's been slighted. Are there some other people, Seth Joyner, you think that deserve to be mentioned that should be on that team?
You know, I don't know, Nick. I mean, I haven't looked at it close enough to really, you know, scrutinize it and look at guys' play and see who's there, because they truly deserve to be there. It truly is a popularity deal, you know. I mean, there's just no getting around it. If you're one of the popular guys and you've had a halfway decent year, let alone that you're a former first-round pick, don't be a top-10 pick, of course you're going to get the nod over the guy that's a seventh-round guy or sixth-round guy who's had to really bust his hump and get there, because you're not supposed to. You weren't drafted to be in that position. You know, it kind of makes the rest of the league, it makes the coaches, the GMs, the scouts, it kind of makes everybody, you know, look like idiots when the seventh-round pick gets in and the first-round pick doesn't get in. It's like, what do we miss? What do we do wrong? But one thing you can never measure what's inside of a guy, what drives him, his heart and his determination to be a great player, opposed to a guy that, you know, that was drafted in the first round and everything is expected of him. You know, that's just the nature of the game and nature of the player, and I think the best player should be voted in, hands down, no doubt about it.
What about the vote taking place as it does a couple weeks before the end of the season, after 14, 15 weeks, rather than at the end of the season? Why do they do that? Is there something logistical that can't be handled in the shorter time frame between that and the Pro Bowl?
You know, I can't put my finger on it. You know, I think that, you know, when you're talking about sending a player to an All-Star game, obviously baseball and basketball, you know, hockey does it a little different because of the length of their seasons. But I think with football, it's a unique situation, because you've got 17 weeks to play 16 games. And I think because of that, you should play all 16 games and let those games determine who is the all-star at each position. I don't think that a guy has really done all that he can do, you know, from the standpoint of 14 and 15 games, opposed to being able to get all 16 in, to give himself the best chance. And so what you're saying is, some guys, because of who they are, they're going to get in anyway. Some guys, because they play well for, you know, 10 games, they're already in. You look at a guy like Tony Romo. Sure, he's done a lot for where the Cowboys are, but the kid has only started, 7-8 games. You know,
I don't understand that either.
Well, that's just the nature of the game. But you know what? He's a media darling. He's good for the NFL. Feel good story. So anytime you get a situation like that, of course. And I'm not saying that the NFL, I'm not in any way implying that the NFL picks and chooses who they want to be, you know, Pro Bowls and things like that. But I can assure you that there's some hanky-panky going on behind the scenes, you know, that just isn't right.
I can't get over the Tom Brady thing. To me, and I'd love anybody to call in that has an opinion about that, but it seems to me, how on earth can you overlook one of the great quarterbacks of all time, a guy that's dealing with a lesser group of receivers, a guy that's still leading his team to their 10-4, they're going to win their division, and frankly, this is probably the guarantee that Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to go far into the playoffs, because if he has anything to prove now, it's that is just a joke.
Well, Nick, sometimes I think you have to look at, you know, what the criteria is. You know, it used to be a time when the Pro Bowl was looked upon as, you know, you had to have the numbers to get in, you know. So then you look at what type of numbers a player posts during the regular season. And for quarterback, obviously, you know, those standards are quite a bit different. For defensive players, you know, it was the standard for linebackers, how many sacks a guy got. You know, I think I got in at a time where, you know, the linebacking position was defined by the Lawrence Taylors and the Derek Thomases and the Pat Swillens of the world. I got in because I was a more rounded football player at that position. I was never going to be the guy to get, you know, 17, 18, you know, sacks, because I just didn't play in a scheme that facilitated that. But I was a much more rounded player. I could play the run. I could play the pass. I could rush the passer, you know, when it counted. But I think you have to look at, you know, what the criteria is. Do you take a bunch of players a la the San Diego Chargers, 9 players in the Pro Bowl because they're 12-2? Or do you take, you know, a player like a Adrian Wilson here from the Cardinals that made it because he played outstanding football? You know, there's no set criteria for how you go about picking and choosing who is eligible or who should be in the Pro Bowl at a particular position. And I think therein lies the problem with the system.
Well, whether it's Tony Romo, who certainly played at that level but not for long enough, or a Tom Brady who deserves it for a multitude of reasons, we need to talk about this some more. When we come back, we're going to talk with Seth Joyner about a story he told me yesterday about Charles Haley at the Pro Bowl and this interesting culture of linebackers, the old style, and Derek Thomas certainly is one of the great linebackers of all time, but certainly a Seth Joyner who could rush the passer, who could tackle, who could cover people out there. Where are the old-style linebackers that could do it all? We'll be right back on Head Games Radio on Sirius Satellite and Sports Byline.